Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Well, a few years ago, Matthew George wondered, in the ride-hailing era, why couldn't buses be smarter too? So he founded Bridge, the bus company with flexible, demand-based routes and pricing. In other words, the future of the city bus. Well, this week, though, Bridge announced that it's shutting down. An expansion deal with an auto manufacturer fell through, unfortunately. However, we are still intrigued by the idea of the future of the city bus. And at one time, by the way, Bridge and the MBTA were even talking about the company possibly providing late-night weekend service. So again, we wonder, what can the MBTA still learn or even adopt from Bridge's experiment? Well, joining me now in the studio is Matthew George. He's the founder and CEO of Bridge. Matthew, it's good to have you back.
Thanks so much.
Although I'm sorry to hear about the company folding.
Hey, we'll live to fight another day.
All right. Well, also with us is James Aloisi. He's former state transportation secretary and now currently a principal at the Pemberton Square Group. Jim's good to have you back as well.
It's nice to be with you both.
Okay. So, Matthew, let's just start with sort of the basics. Can you just give us the reason why that Bridge, because I always thought those Bridge buses were full and all of a sudden, no more company. What happened?
They were. It would be I think it would be a lot less tragic if that was actually sort of the underlying reason. So earlier in the year, especially with the auto manufacturers starting to create partnerships between themselves and innovative transportation companies, we started to get a tremendous amount of inbound from car companies looking to fill out the dance card of partnerships in the space. We made the strategic decision, fateful, to push back a Series B financing round to be able to form a partnership with one of those companies.
So rather than venture funding, you were going to partner with an manufacturer.
Absolutely. Okay. For the same, if not a little bit more amount of money, but also access to fleet, to access to autonomous research and a bunch of those other things that they're working on. We narrowed it down to three companies and then to one. And we originally had a close date of March 31st. And a week of delay became 2 weeks of delay, became 4 weeks of delay, which ate into our cash buffer. And because of a lockout agreement, we couldn't restart a conversation with another auto manufacturer. And thus why I'm talking to you here today as a eulogy.
rather than a celebration of perhaps something new, but it still can be that. But before we turn to this question of sort of lessons learned,
sure,
more broadly about transit, I mean, how was the business doing? Was there high demand for the Bridge buses? Was this model of having a smart city bus, on-demand, flexible pricing, flexible routes, was it working?
Yeah, that's one of the things we're most proud of, especially looking back. The Bridge fleet deployed in about a million different ways, literally a million different ways to meet demand throughout Boston one day to the next, right? The routes and the schedules and things like that were very different. So we were really the first to actually be able to go out there and say, hey, we're deploying transit in a way that's a little bit different, right? Our average commuter saved about 40% of their time compared with traditional right, modes of mass transit. And we were able to deliver it profitably on some of our most mature routes. So, you know, overall, we were growing about 1,000% year to year. But at the end of the day, it's a business with huge assets, right? Big buses.
The buses, yeah.
And at the end of the day, the barrier to scale was significant. And we needed that partnership to really get over it.
Okay, barrier to scale. So they needed money to grow, Jim. I mean, I think an old hand at transportation might have been able to say, it's expensive to run a transit company no matter what, right?
Yeah, are you calling me an old hand?
I am.
So it is. I mean, one of the takeaways, I think, from this whole experience, and I have given Matt and his team a lot of credit for you know, nothing venture, nothing gained, as I tweeted out the other day, and they should be credited for giving it a try. But it highlights the importance of robust, stable revenue to running a transit system. And so when folks like me keep talking and talking about the MBTA and its need for net new revenue, I point to today's discussion and this week's experience, which is to say, look, the T also needs to innovate. Everybody deserves a first-rate experience on a bus. And the only way you get there is to invest in it and make it work well. There's no transit system I know of anywhere in this country that isn't subsidized,
right,
because it costs a lot of money. Whether that subsidy is coming from a sales tax on the public side or private sector investment capital on the private side.
It's
still
a subsidy. Yeah. Matt?
So to be clear, right, the reason that companies like us require outside investment and things like that is not to fund operations, Jim, right? I feel like that's a point that we need to make. But because we're investing in machine learning scientists, software engineers, and other things to be able to take the vehicle and the efficiencies that we were able to show and expand that out even further. So I think it's a very fair argument of saying robust investment in public transit. And you've been out there for decades, right, really talking about that. But we're in the same position that we were, right, 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. So the reason why I'm very glad to have both of you in is, quite frankly, I'm just going to fully disclose to listeners, I was kind of apoplectic yesterday. I was like, why can't Bridge at least is proving that the idea of a smart bus system is, I mean, okay, the financial question aside, is technically viable. I mean, it was like proving it every day. So I was just frothing at the mouth. Why can't we take some of those lessons and really use it to develop the MBTA bus system for the future?
Well, I think we can. I mean, the whole point of innovation is that you learn from things, right? Innovation doesn't always mean things are successful, but it means that ideas, things can be learned, right? Lessons learned. I have been advocating, and many of us advocate, for the MBTA to embark upon a new era of bus transit called Bus Rapid Transit, or BRT. And that would be a game changer in the city of Boston, the city of Cambridge, around the region. We can do that most affordably. It's the most affordable way to enliven, expand, modernize, and improve the transit experience for people in greater Boston. Yeah. And I think there are many people, including the Barr Foundation, putting a lot of effort toward getting folks at the state level and the city level committed to bringing our bus transit system into the 21st century. Mm.
You know, I know this sounds pie in the sky, but I'm genuinely wondering, like, some of the long-term, very legitimate critiques of MBTA bus service in particular, like it's in, you know, the poor stepchild of the commuter rail and the trains, and also bus service is not infrequently the worst in places that need it the most, right? In underserved communities. And to me, I don't necessarily believe, I'm not a techno-utopianist, Matthew, in any way, shape, or form, but I just thought on-demand pricing and scheduling could solve that problem, right? The buses could go where the demand is needed, in communities that are clamoring for better transit. So I suppose that's my editorial rant. But let me just ask you, I'm going to just hope that Joe Shortsleeve is listening to this. And if he is, and he has the brilliant idea of hiring you now since you're free, do you think it's possible to scale what Bridge was doing city or region-wide? Like, what would it take to put this system grafted onto the MBTA?
Yeah, I think it takes to be clear, right, we were scaling. We're growing about 1,000% year over year. But in order to be able to deliver the service robustly, right, throughout the entire city, especially to the folks that need it, if you look at the Brookings study a couple of years ago that said the average Bostonian can only access about 28% of the jobs that they're qualified for via 90 minutes of public transit, unless we really rethink how we're providing public transit all over the country, we're still not going to get the economic mobility that we want, right, in cities, if we're limiting people's physical mobility.
But so what would it take to scale it all the way up to an MBTA-sized
So system? In order to be able to scale it to the MBTA, right, and to the size of the MBTA, it really takes from the top down a really new look, right, at how we deliver service and getting out of the no, we can't, right, and into the yes, we can type environment of service delivery. I think one of the things that Brian Shortsleeve and Governor Baker have been tremendous about is saying, bringeth thou ideas, right, and let's start to integrate it for the people who need it the most. For instance, late night service. When you're looking at those people who need to get to jobs and don't have a way of doing that, we proposed an alternative. Jim was against it. But at the end of the day, we need to try new things.
Yeah. And by the way, you corrected me on Brian's name. Thank you.
No worries.
By the way, I'm getting my short sleeves confused.
No, I'm not against. I wasn't against late night service. Transit Matters, the board I serve on, we've been critical to actually making it happen. Look, you need to do things that we're not doing now. Buses need to have their own dedicated lanes. You need to have people paying off the bus. Yeah. There are lots of things we could do very quickly to make the bus experience a better one. So people like me have been advocating for that. You can have all the good intentions in the world, But if you don't have the money to do it and the resources to make it happen and the will to do things like take lanes out of parking to make a dedicated bus lane and enforce it, then we're not going to have the kind of experience that we all want.
So infrastructure needs also.
It's a new way of thinking about it. You need to take the infrastructure that is dedicated to vehicles and parking and rededicate it in some respect to transit mobility, which is carrying many, many more people. It's a much more sustainable way to move people from one place to another.
Yeah. Matthew, let me ask you, you were doing Bridge was, what, I don't know if you were able to launch it or it was in the works, some larger scale stuff in Kansas City, is that right?
Yeah, we're really proud of that, yeah.
So was it just, you know, Bridge in Kansas City, or you were partnering with the city's transit system there? What were you doing?
To your last question about how do you scale it to a city-sized transit agency, we had a one-year federally funded pilot program in Kansas City that we did in cooperation with the Kansas City Area Transit Authority and in cooperation with research partners at the University of California, Berkeley. The exciting part of that was the vehicles were owned by the city. The drivers in the driver's seat were amalgamated transit union unionized drivers, and the fare was set by the city. In Kansas City, we were able to prove that we could take the operating cost down per bus hour from about $220 down to about $68 while serving on a per capita basis more people with higher headways than the traditional network. And that's all publicly available through the UC Berkeley study that's been put out there. But at the end of the day, it's Kansas City, right, which was built around the car. The overall numbers were incredibly low. But on the per unit basis, there's a significant amount of improvement.
Right. Jim, did you want to just jump in here again?
Do I want to talk about Kansas City? No, I don't want to talk.
You want to talk about?
I want to talk about Boston.
Yeah,
but it's an example. It's an example of how cities can actually do it.
That's what I'm wondering. If we're seeing sort of tantalizing examples, and again, all the differences that Matthew pointed out, points taken on that because they matter here. But I mean, I don't see why, again, with the will. Why we couldn't try something like that?
Well, we could. I mean, look, I don't want to debate with Matthew whether Kansas City was a success or not. Let me just say, in Boston, in Greater Boston, at the MBTA, there's a lot that you could do today. There are very smart people I just wrote about who work at the T, who are technologists, who can help guide us to a future where the T is behaving more like a 21st century institution. What we've got to do is get past the old ways of thinking. We have to stop thinking about the bus as a vehicle fighting in the same traffic as every other vehicle. We need to think about transit as a sustainable form of mobility that more and more people desire and that hasn't been properly invested in for decades. And we need to think about doing things that are not really about technology, like dedicating lanes, right? And we need to think about pushing information to people on smartphones, which is technology. All of that stuff can be done right away and today. It's just a question of how do we think about it. The problem that we've got in the public sector, of course, is that people are always playing catch-up because there's so much to do. There's so much on their plate. There's a $7.3 billion gap in state of good repair. But, you know, we've got to figure out how to multitask.
Right.
And so my plea to people is let's support the T in multitasking and get some of these innovations happening so that people will like it and we'll be able to do more of it.
Right. I mean, I can imagine there are a lot of listeners right now who are like, Magna, why are you talking about pie in the sky ideas when we do have very real immediate term problems with the T? And I am aware of those. So Jim's touched on a lot of that and why can't we do it both? Agreed. Matthew, just last quick question for you. So what's next?
I don't know yet. What I'm focused on over the next 2 weeks is making sure that our drivers find their next chapter. We were the first and only startup to sign on to the Fight for 15 pledge to make sure that our drivers were paid very well with a livable wage and good health care. And my sole goal over the next couple weeks is making sure those drivers find their next opportunity.
Well, Matthew George is the founder and CEO of Bridge, which sadly is no longer. But Matthew, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, thank you so much.
And Jim Aloisi, former State Secretary of Transportation and now a principal at the Pemberton Square Group. It's always great to talk with you, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.